The ACEC Research Institute recently released the groundbreaking 2020 Engineering Industry Profile. Now, this study provides the most comprehensive view we have ever seen for the entire engineering, architectural, and related services sectors. We're talking 3% of all U.S. jobs, $386 billion in revenue, nearly $45 billion in tax dollars, an $88,000 a year average salary, and so much more. The study also benchmarks state-level activities. Now take the opportunity to download your free copy today. Get the 2020 Engineering Industry Profile by visiting acecresearchinstitute.org. Download your copy today. Welcome to the first inaugural, in an inaugural week, private market update with our own Aaron McLaughlin. And this is a show that we want to have regularly that talks about not only the private industry brief that Aaron puts together for us, but then also some other economic news, business-related news, things that are happening in the world to keep everyone kind of informed on what the market looks like and what the economy looks like and how the industry is doing. And we figured we'd kick off our first episode with a program that the Chamber is putting together, which we contributed to. And it's called the U.S. Chamber Economic Analysis. And it coincides with their annual State of American Business program, which took place last week. And Aaron attended the virtual program, and ACEC is a member of the chamber and contributed some economic data of our own to that larger report. And wanted to give Aaron an opportunity to talk about what that is and what it looks like and what we contributed and essentially, you know, what is the chamber's economic analysis telling us? So Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thank you guys for having me. Thank you, Jeff. Yeah, so the Chamber does an annual program called the State of American Business, and it's always in January, and I've attended in the past. I attended last year. This year, obviously, is much more dramatic since the state of business is much more dramatic. And for the first time ever, they had their lead economist reach out to all the major trade associations, of which we are one, and do like a compendium of the different trade associations and the different market outlooks. So today I really wanted to share with you because many of those trade associations represent our client base, you know, especially our private client base. So I wanted to share with you sort of some of the findings that were in the larger report. So he actually had 37 associations submit. And in the survey, he asked, you know, how is your industry doing? And we responded slightly worse. There were four choices. And that was the majority of responses from folks. So, you know, we cited the statistic that we get from the U.S. Bureau of the Census that shows basically for the second and third quarters this past year, our AE industry is down about 12%. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was our main statistic that we provided.
Yeah. And how does that reflect with other industries that kind of reported their own information?
Well, we are sort of in line with most of the other industries, but one of the findings of the report is that the recovery is just, you know, it's extremely varied depending on how a particular industry comes face to face with their customer base during the pandemic. So cited in the report, for example, is that airports are expected to have a $23 billion loss between March of last year and this upcoming March. And that construction, although, you know, an extreme bright spot for single family residential, the actual commercial construction side is expected to be down about 30% in 2020. So, you know, those are sort of the more sobering statistics. So as far as us being at a decline of maybe about 12%, you know, we are certainly faring better, better than many.
Is there anything else to glean from the building sector? You know, since that is such a big part of the economy.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. In the survey, the chamber received feedback from the National Association of Home Builders. So, you know, they cited their main statistic, which I cite in my private sector briefs regularly for folks, the NAHB and Wells Fargo confidence measure. And that confidence measure literally in their summer and fall reports broke records. So the single family housing market is doing great.
Yeah.
But the International Council of Shopping Centers in NAIOP, you know, obviously had a much different story mm-hmm. to tell. So, and I learned through the International Council of Shopping Centers that one in every four jobs is actually retail related in the yeah. U.S. Yeah. So
that has a significant impact. And it kind of goes, I mean, it really matches what you and I have talked about in the past. And, you know, looking at that move, I don't know if it's temporary or if it's reached its peak. I mean, there are always stories out there to talk about the exodus from the urban cores out to the suburban areas, which might be driving a lot of that home building. You have millennials now have really established themselves. Everybody talked about, oh, millennials aren't going to buy houses. Well, the data shows they are buying houses.
Right.
And, you know, you have this kind of movement because of the pandemic and people who can work from home. And then tied in with the fact that we're all stuck at home and we're ordering from Amazon,
yes.
which means that, you know, that focus on warehousing and digital distribution is supplanting, you know, construction of new shopping malls or
exactly.
or town centers.
Exactly. So with the single family residential, you know, we have discussed it and we've noted that it's probably about three different factors that are driving that. You know, one factor is that sort of possible drive to suburbanization just because people might need more room, you know, in or yard or space that they weren't getting in an urban environment. Secondly, which sort of coincides is sort of the demography. So, you know, just within the last couple of years, new home loans for millennials, they made up the largest statistic of new home loan, you know, and that's really just because that's a large generation. You know, we're Generation X, so we were a small generation, but they're a larger generation and they're sort of, that it's their time. They're in their mid-late 30s, a lot of them, and they're buying larger homes. And then thirdly, low interest rates.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is sort of that third factor that, you know, when you're seeing interest rates, you know, at 2 or 3%, it's just
historic lows. It's just, it's yeah. money is so cheap right now that it makes no sense to avoid buying something. I mean, it's you know, and it's interesting to see how that's going to change with the incoming administration and monetary policy with, you know, their you know, Fed pick and everything yeah. going on with that.
Well, most economists and most folks that contributed to this report do expect the low interest rates to sustain for a couple of years. So I think that will be in our favor overall. And then as you mentioned, you know, in NAIOP, which many of our members are also members of NAIOP. And of course, that is sort of the Association for Commercial Real Estate Holders. You know, they noted that warehouse was their strongest sector. And that really is due to that e-commerce demand. And, you know, their weakest sector is retail, you know, and how we sort of come out of this is really about human behavior. And as we get the vaccine and as we go back to quote unquote normal, you know, are we going to have a new normal or are we going to have the same normal that we had a year ago?
Yeah. And how's that sector going to respond? I mean, there's so many unanswered questions because even if there is a snapback on retail, it's probably not going to look the same as it did pre-pandemic. I mean, it seems to me like the world is going to change and there's going to be some sort of shift. People might go back to stores, but the stores might be different.
Yeah. Yeah. So although not private sector completely, they also... the report had some really good detail on the transportation sector. So for our members that read my briefs regularly know that one of the markets that I cover is intermodal and logistics, because here in the US, although ACEC, we do pay a lot of attention to transportation, you know, a lot of it is about freight and is about ports and about intermodal and class one rail and sort of that private side of commercial transportation. So, you know, I thought it was very interesting. You know, they talked to our friends at ARTBA, and they noted that there were four factors that were really driving the transportation recovery, you know, that is more public focused. And that is sort of like the stay-at-home orders, national unemployment, the decline in public transit use, and the decline in commercial air travel. So, you know, as far as the sort of more public side of transportation, the return of those user fees once we come out of this recession and how those shortfalls are made up, you know, if they're made up through federal funding or just simple budget cutting, you know, that's really the driving conversation mm-hmm. around the public transportation market.
Yeah, and the omnibus that contained some small, not to the levels that I think that everyone in our world would like to see, but some of that stopgap funding plus ups for transit and for other, you know, state DOTs to kind of work through this is good. And I'm imagine that that's going to carry through with the recovery plan that the Biden administration is working on right now, that there will be some assistance to state and local, you know, transit agencies and the like. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see exactly how much that recovers once we exit out of the pandemic, how many users of transit are going to return to transit. And how many people who took a bus are going to take a bus again? Right. And how, you know, and that's really interesting. In Washington, we're seeing prolonged closures of Metro that predated, of course, the security that we see this week with the inaugural, where they're yes. shutting everything down. But they started closing lines, and they didn't really give us a date when they were going to reopen them when they closed right. them. They just were closed, right. and we'll see what happens. I guess it's all this data helps the chamber and organizations like ACEC better yes. understand the markets. I mean, how does the chamber use this information in their policy, you know, priorities, their advocacy?
Well, you know, after I attended the program last year, and it was of course held in person, and it was just a few hours. This year, sort of like we've done at ACEC, they broke things up a little bit and things were virtual. And so they held a series of policy hours on the subsequent days afterwards. And it became very clear that, you know, some of this economic and market information is helping to drive the chamber's policy. And of course, there's a lot of overlap between their policy priorities and ACEC. And for those of our members that follow our advocacy very closely, they know that often we sign on to chamber letters and we work very closely with them. And they're very powerful. They're a very powerful organization. So they actually have over 20 policy priorities, but I think that there's what I would say four of them are very, very directly related to what we do. And those four are what they call infrastructure. Is the first. Second would be environmental affairs, climate and sustainability. Third is energy. And lastly would be cybersecurity. And on the energy part, which we didn't really talk about yet with regards to the survey responses, you know, I found it very encouraging that that market has been pretty stable in the last year. You know, we saw sort of the oil and gas market dip a little bit, but the respondents from the American Petroleum Institute and other forecasters in that market are really very upbeat for 2021. Okay. So I think that there's a lot to look forward to with regards to for the energy market. And then of course, broadband, you know, in those sort of policy power hours that they presented with different panelists, I was struck, as I have been, you know, over the last year, at how often broadband is talked about right now. Of course, you know, that was the focus of my private market session at the fall conference was broadband and data centers as well. And that just continues to be in everybody's, one of their main talking points. So, yeah. You know, it's sort of the broadening of the concept of infrastructure includes broadband, and it's just such a hot bipartisan topic.
Yeah, it's largely attributed to the pandemic. I mean, it's one of those things that kept on being talked about and talked about in different at least when I was, before I joined ACEC and I was on the committee on TNI, it was brought up, but it was that amorphous idea of broadband. Nobody really kind of focused in on it. And now with everyone being locked in at home, having to deal with remote schools for their kids, having to deal with remote logging, you know, logins for work, doing, of course, e-commerce, you know, you noticed that
healthcare appointments.
Yeah, the digital divide became very evident. And now it's gone from that larger issue of, yes, we have to invest in broadband, to now we identify what the gaps are.
Right.
And there's going to be a lot of opportunity there, I think, to really invest. That seems like the administration coming in, the Biden administration, I mean, I think the point that you raised with energy, that they're seeing an upside, you know, potential for you know, the coming year. There's a lot of opportunity there from resiliency, resilient infrastructure, energy independence, things of that nature.
Right. I mean, I think historically, many people have the attitude that maybe the chamber is a bit old school in some of their policy priorities. But I was struck by, you know, they are supportive of rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement. You know, they are supportive of, you know, us building towards a carbon neutral environment. And, you know, as our member firms know, but they're also at the same time supportive of not, you know, having too many regulations that inhibit permitting and other things. So in many ways, you know, it's a middle ground. It's not to the left or to the right. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, overall there's optimism for 2021 because, you know, we in our market, you know, we can help build towards that resiliency. We see opportunities with regards to that. But at the same time, of course, we want less, you know, regulation because we don't want our projects to go on hold or to stop or to slow down considerably. But obviously, our members also help guide our clients through those regulations. So, yeah. You know, for us, I think that mix of being green, you know, in a cautious market-oriented way, it also, you know, really, really helps. And then, of course, lastly, the chamber is known for its tax work, you know, and for our member firms, obviously, that's not market related. So that's not something that I personally spend a lot of time on. But obviously, that's something that ACEC also works with them on, is just making sure that we're in a pro-business tax environment for our members.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, you know, we've been engaged with them a lot on, like you mentioned, you know, we're members of the chamber, and we work with them a lot. We're going to have Ed Mortimer, who handles their transportation policy, their infrastructure work, on the government affairs update this week to talk about their Build by the Fourth plan, which we've signed on to, and we're one of 140 organizations that have joined the chamber, again, pushing for infrastructure. So a lot of the work they're doing is work that we're aligned with, and a lot of the things that we want to accomplish, they can definitely help with a fairly big microphone. So it's good that we are taking part in this report. I mean, having ACEC be able to provide information for the State of American Business Program gives us visibility, which is important. And it shows that, you know, we have industry data that we need to share.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, I think it's great to see what our client-facing associations, what they're sharing, and it was great to be able to contribute. You know, this is the first annual report, and I think that we'll continue to contribute in years going forward.
Wonderful. Well, Aaron, thank you for giving us an update on that. Like I said, this is the first of many shows. I think that over the course of the next weeks and months, what we're going to do is, you know, feature some of the private industry briefs that Aaron works on and is, you know, they're very popular with our members, and then talk about things like this, reports, news, just market changes that we make sure you need to know, and we get that information, you know, out to you. So, you know, keep watch. This will be a regular show throughout the year and hopefully beyond. And we look forward to a lot of great content over the next couple of months.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, this has been the Private Markets Update, the first of many, from the American Council of Engineering Companies. We will see you next time. And until then, stay safe, everyone.
The ACEC Research Institute recently released the groundbreaking 2020 Engineering Industry Profile. Now, this study provides the most comprehensive view we have ever seen for the entire engineering, architectural, and related services sectors. We're talking 3% of all U.S. jobs, $386 billion in revenue, nearly $45 billion in tax dollars, an $88,000 a year average salary, and so much more. The study also benchmarks state-level activities. Now take the opportunity to download your free copy today. Get the 2020 Engineering Industry Profile by visiting acecresearchinstitute.org. Download your copy today.